Michael Smith. After about a week and a half off, it's time for episode 57 of the Canes Cast. You know what that means.
What's that?
It's showtime. Guess who's back again?
Hey, we're back.
That is correct.
With another episode of Canes Cast after a little break, Traverse City, NHL Prospects Tournament, obviously.
Somebody was on a boat, then on a kayak. That somebody was you.
Yes, guilty as charged.
No, just letting people know.
And now we're back. We'll hit the regular Monday schedule, hopefully, from here on out. But Hurricanes training camp, day two. Supposed to be day one, but now day two.
I'm actually happy it's day two.
Yeah,
training
as
camp,
am I.
Training camp can, it's one of these times of year. I don't know how you feel, but I wish we could just fast forward through September and be ready for October 4th. Somebody who's already for those things is John Forslund, the outstanding play-by-play voice of your Carolina Hurricanes. He'll be joining us on this episode of Canes Cast. Excited to talk to John, talk about training camp. This is, are we going to do the, you know, we taped earlier with John so we can fill people in on what's going to happen here?
Just be prepared for, what, 20 minutes of just pure informational awesomeness.
Yeah, we covered everything with John.
Yeah, I mean, from really start to finish. And there's nobody better to talk to about Hurricanes hockey than John Forslund.
Oh, agreed, 100%. So with that, let's set up, before we talk to John, and you hear that conversation here on the Canes Cast, let's get a few things out of the way, what we've seen, what we expect, and things that have happened. One of them is there's one captain. It's Justin Williams. He was named the singular captain, with the alternates being Jordan Staal and Justin Falk. Jordan Staal and Justin Falk yesterday, when they addressed the media, said everything perfectly. There's not one thing that you can look into their answers and say, well, what? They said it's the perfect thing to do. And honestly, Michael, I agree. It was the right thing to do. I don't want to go revisionist history, but I think it should have been the situation last year.
Right.
And now it's the situation this year. And for a team this young to have a guy that respected, that accomplished in his career, to be the, this is how we're going to do things, as that voice in the locker room instead of, well, should we do this? I think it's only going to help this team.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not revisionist history, because I think you can go back and listen to our podcast from last year when we were speculating on who the captain might be. I think we both were in agreement that it probably should be Justin Williams.
Yeah.
As a kind of gap between, okay, here's Eric Staal, gets traded, was the captain of this team for a number of years. This team hasn't had a captain for, as of last year, it was a year. And then Justin Williams comes in as a veteran leader on a two-year contract. I think it made sense to make him the captain. It seemed like a no-brainer. Obviously, that didn't happen, and we had the double captaincy, the co-captaincy, and that was, I think, a misstep from the beginning. And Jordan Staal and Justin Falk said as much yesterday.
And again, I don't think that is any indictment on those two men, those two players.
No,
I think it's just how it was handled. And then you're going to hear John Forslund says it, but it's also the case when you have two captains. Okay, which guy are we listening to today? Who's got the final word on this?
Yeah, it was like a flow chart to determine, you know, who was the captain at any given time. And it was an ill-conceived idea from the beginning. And again, that's not an indictment on either Jordan Staal or Justin Falk, who were both good leaders in their own right, especially Jordan Staal when you look at the things off the ice that he was dealing with last year, and how when he came to the rink, you know, he was able to handle himself professionally. And that's, it takes unbelievable strength to be able to do that.
Yes.
And they will serve as the alternates this year because of the work they put in last year as co-captains and the leadership that they did bring. So as a whole, I think the Hurricanes leadership group is strong, but you've got a guy now at the top in Justin Williams wearing the C who is a veteran, is a leader. He knows how to win. He's been there. He's a champion, a three-time Stanley Cup champion. And that's the exact guy you want leading a young team.
And the other thing, he has got an incredible rapport with the head coach of this team, Rod Brind'Amour. And Rod Brind'Amour said it yesterday. The easiest decision he's going to make as a head coach.
Yeah, the first decision and the easiest decision.
He said, because wasn't even something you had to think about. And then he told us how Jordan Staal and Justin Falk handled the news that this is what was going to happen. And they handled it like pros, like you'd expect them to. But I think it's good. I think that it's done, and now let's get ready for the season. You've got your leader to do that. Speaking of that, Michael, what have you noticed? What stood out the first few days as we're getting ready for the second session here on a Friday? What has stood out for you in three sessions of training camp for head coach Rod Brindamore and the Carolina Hurricanes?
Well, yeah, hopefully everybody's enjoying the gnat sound of hockey practice in the background, pucks banging against the glass, sticks taking shots, skates carving the ice. It's great that hockey's back. And really, the few things I've noticed so far in the limited time that we've seen these guys, we've seen about 3 hours worth of practice. And you get to see how head coach Rod Brindamore runs a practice. He's very vocal in his instruction. He's very vocal in telling these guys what he expects of them. Everything is done at speed with pace. The one thing I noticed yesterday too was, you know, the breaks in between the drills that they took were minimal.
Yep.
There was a quick shootout to determine who was going to skate, whether it be the skaters or the goaltenders. Very limited time at the whiteboard. The pace was high. It was going. And then you had the big skate at the end, and guys were huffing and puffing. But you talk to a guy like Sebastian Aho, and he said, look, it was intense. There was a lot of skating, but that's the way it should be. That was the perfect way to start off camp. And I think the tone was set exactly from day one, and now you're seeing it carry into to day two when these guys get back on the ice real soon after they were on the ice yesterday.
Yeah, I loved the pace. I absolutely did. There was no wasted time. It was go get some water, back into a drill. We're going to do every drill at top speed. Let's go. Let's push the pace. And Michael, we've watched enough of the NHL, not just recently, but in our lives. Like, that's the game now. Let's go fast. That's how we're going to be. And, you know, some teachable moments. And I think that Rod Brindamore handled those perfectly. You know, he has not shouted at players. He's taught them when there's things that he wants to get done differently as far as the drills go. And they're getting ready to start their second session here. So we'll try to give you a little commentary when we can with what's going on.
It's a learning experience, not only for these players, but also for Brindamore, who has spent time as an assistant coach and now has to run a practice, has to be the voice, know what's going on, know what drills are coming up next, instruct the players, instruct his fellow coaches on what he wants them to do. So it's a learning experience for everyone involved, and his assistant coaches too, Jeff Daniels, Dean Chenalth, learning how that they all mesh together, what their certain roles are. So it's an incredible learning experience for the players and coaches alike, this training camp, and it's been fun to watch so far.
I also like to see the development of the younger players take the lead role, and one of the guys who does that is Sebastian Aho. And he even mentioned it yesterday that, you know, I was where Andrei Svechnikov was. So my job is to do the drills, show them how to do them, and, you know, get ready. And I think there's an accountability with this team. I think there's an excitement with this team. And, again, this is super early, Michael. Yeah. But there does seem to be a different feel around this camp for this team.
Well, and today, too, you saw, or at least I saw, Justin Falk. You know, at one point during one drill, Andrei Svechnikov, I think, wasn't exactly sure about what was going on. Justin Falk, you know, takes his glove off, shows him exactly what is supposed to be going on. I mean, that's the leadership you count on from one of your alternate captains. And, you know, Falk's been there. Falk has been that guy that's the first-year guy who maybe isn't sure exactly what's going on. And they're all here to have each other's back, make sure everyone's on the same page, pulling in the right direction. And Justin Falk's going to be one of those guys to make sure that everybody else on the team knows what's going on.
By the way, one of the things that I hope is being picked up on during this CanesCast episode, the pass is going tape to tape.
Yeah.
I love that
Snappy sound.
Love hearing it. And there's some snap, so hopefully that can keep going on.
And hopefully it isn't too loud. Hopefully everybody can hear us just fine. I think these mics should do the trick.
Yeah, I think we're doing all right, Michael. All right, what else do you have? What are your concerns right now for this team in training camp heading into the season, and what are the other thoughts that you have as we get ready for October 4th, the big show? You know, that's it. For me, that's the big showdown day when the Islanders come into town.
I think one of the unexpected concerns was the loss of Victor Rask. The news coming on Thursday that he had surgery on his fourth and fifth right fingers, and he's going to be out indefinitely. And the Hurricanes aren't really sure exactly how long that's going to be. Rod Brindamore only saying it's a serious injury. He's been through something like it, so he was able to talk to Rask about it. And for Rask, it's disappointing because this was the hope was that this was going to be a big season. You know, he had a big summer of training. He had shoulder surgery to start it off.
I don't know how much you went out to the Hurricanes practice rink at RCI. But,
I didn't make it out much.
But Victor Rask, the times I was there, looked like he was on a mission.
Yeah.
Like, he had slimmed down. He was in shape. He was focused. He was noticeable in basically captain's practices or, you know, little off drills. He was noticeable, you know, fighting for the puck, making plays. So, yeah, him with a kitchen accident involving his fourth and fifth finger on his right hand, you have to think it's serious because he's going to miss some time.
Yeah.
And we don't know exactly how much, but hopefully he'll be able to recover quickly and get back into the lineup.
It's disappointing because you did expect that maybe this is a year he gets back to the form. And I think we talked about it on the last podcast, is he needs to regain that form that he had in his sophomore year in the NHL.
Yeah, he was one of the players I was counting on having to turn in a big year for this team.
So now the question becomes, who fills the spot? Because I fully expected him to be in the top nine, at least, perhaps even the top six as a center on this team. So now early in camp, we see Sebastian Aho maybe in the middle. Does it open the door a little wider for a guy like Lucas Walmart to make this team? I think these are all questions to watch as we move forward, because it's a decent hole that the Hurricanes have to fill now.
All right, I've got a question for you, and it involves Traverse City and the Canes' prospects.
Okay.
The result, not so
ideal.
Good.
Yeah.
Sixth place finish, I believe.
Sixth place. And that's, look, it's disappointing to an extent because the Hurricanes did take some good talent up there, and you wanted to see a better finish. But I caveat it, and I always caveat the tournament with anything can happen. It's four games. You drop one of them in round robin play and you're not in the championship game, and you never know what to expect. You never know what to expect with a team coming together that quickly and how they're going to mesh. And for whatever reason, it just didn't work out for the Hurricanes this season.
All right. This is where I'd like to think Michael Smith and I are different from other podcasts and other people who are out there, because we're honest human beings. So do you want me to be real?
Be real.
Want me to be real?
Be real.
All right. Here's what happens when you lose a tournament like this.
Nothing.
There's two answers that happen for these prospect tournaments. If you win it, everybody's, oh, look, we're ahead of schedule. Look at the prospects. Oh, things are great. And when you lose it or have a subpar showing than what you expected, the standard operating line is, well, you know, it's really about the player development. It's not about the finish. It's, you know, anything can happen. It's just you're rolling the dice and whatever comes up, comes up. So that's what happens. The answer is somewhere in between. For me, it's a prospect tournament. So you know what that's about? Do the guys who you're looking at to improve from the year before or the players you just drafted come in and show you they got a little something? Now, that can mean that they don't have the great team around them or you're trying to force something in 4 days, but I look in the past. Do guys like Sebastian Aho step on the ice and dominate? Did Andrei Svechnikov look good? Did Marty Natchez look good? The winning becomes a different byproduct. If you win, you can say, look, that's the culture you want. You're fostering that environment. If you lose, you say, well, it's really not about winning or losing. It's about development. The winning, to me, if you get W's in those tournaments, are great because I think of what it builds. It's kind of, not by osmosis, but it's a happy byproduct that, hey, we won, and we like this feeling.
It's nice to have that high going into training camp.
Exactly, especially for young guys, for players who were trying to come in and fight for a spot.
Here's Justin Williams. Oh, he scores.
Oh, and he went five-hole, too.
And now Nedeljkovic and Scott Darling have to skate the length of the ice.
Slow deke, nods his head. Brett Pesce right there for the fist pump for the captain of the Carolina Hurricanes after that goal.
But I think you hit it on the nail exactly. Is the takeaway from this tournament isn't the result. It's the individual performances. And did the guys that you wanted to see perform? And for the most part, I would say the answer is yes.
Well, I heard Jim Nill, the Dallas Stars general manager, when I was driving into training camp the other day, talk about the Stars, who, by the way, beat the Hurricanes in the 5-6 game, right?
They did.
Jim Nill was asked about his prospects and their finish. And Nil's exact answer was, yeah, we're really there to see, are the guys ready for training camp, what we want to see. He goes, if we win that tournament, it's great.
Yep.
And he goes, but the answer is, we're watching, do players that we're going to count on for the season look like they were men amongst boys in these tournaments? He goes, that's what you really, as a GM, that's what you're watching. So you take that out, and that's, again, fine for me. It's the result, again, nobody's going to be happy with it. Nobody's going to sit here, maybe Michael Smith will, and tell you, well, hey, and why would you do that to these people?
I wouldn't do that. I mean, it was just, the result was disappointing, for sure.
I mean, maybe you can take that sixth place and put it on a kayak in pure Michigan. And
send it right out to the lake.
Send it. You know what? I'm not even going to ask you if you like it. Keep it. You can send that back.
We're sending it right back.
But
I'm going to keep the performances of Andrei Svechnikov, Martin Natchez. I think those two, you really started to see the chemistry building between those two. I thought in the last game against Dallas, they had some of their best 5-on-5 performances of the tournament. They're both incredibly skilled, both incredibly talented. Svechnikov, as an 18-year-old skater, is strong. He's big. He's got a great shot, a great release. The goalie scored off the faceoff in round-robin play. The goalie didn't even flinch. He didn't even see it before it popped out of the net. And then Martin Natchez has worked to steal the puck in the corner in the game against Dallas and find Svechnikov, who was reloading it in the top of the offensive zone. Yeah. And Svechnikov was able to deke through a couple defenders and bury the shot. I mean, that's what you want to see from those two, and that's what those two showed. I did want to see more from the line of AHLers, the Nicolas Waugh, Alexei Cirela, and Julien Gauthier line. And Gauthier, I think, was perhaps the best of those three. But I kind of expected them to dominate a little more than they did. And perhaps that's a byproduct of the Hurricanes' struggles on defense in the tournament. So I won't read into that too much. But I think what you can take away is Alexei Cirela feels good. He's way healthier than he was at this point last summer when he was coming off surgery and didn't have the productive summer that he had this year. Nicolas Waugh is much improved as a skater. And Julien Gauthier, I think, is learning to use his size more as an advantage. He's putting the body on people. He's being a presence in front of the net on the power play. And that's what he did in the tournament. You know, just using his body in front of the net, cleaning up those rebounds, making it tough on the goaltender. And he's learning to do that. And I think his second season as a professional hockey player is going to be an improvement on his first.
Yeah, I think that's what everybody is looking at. That's what I wanted to know, because you can only know so much from watching on a stream, which I watched.
Yes. The camera angle is not the best.
you're there, you're picking up the pace, you're seeing how everybody is. Anybody else besides Svechnikov and Natchez? I know you just mentioned Cirela, but anybody else maybe surprise you with good play, or you came away impressed besides those two?
I honestly like the way Jeremy Helvig played in net. He's going to enter his first professional season. Wouldn't be surprised to see him play in the ECHL with the Florida Everblades, because he's going to get regular time in net down there. But he was excellent in the first game. The Hurricanes might not win a game in that tournament had he not played as well as he did in that first game. The second game, maybe not as good, but I thought he rebounded very well in the third game. And that's 3 games in 4 days. For a guy who hasn't had game action all summer. So for him to jump into that like he did, I thought was pretty impressive. And he's made some good stops here in training camp early. So you can see that he's taken that week in Traverse City and brought it right into training camp here.
All right. Well, more on Traverse City coming up. People have waited long enough, and it's time for us to bring in our guest for episode 57 of the Canes Cast. He is the one and only John Forslund. Well, with training camp, I can't think of anybody better to talk to who's seen a lot of these from pretty much every position you can as a hockey commentator, broadcaster, somebody who does PR as well. And if you don't know John Forslund, well, then
I go back to the Louisiana Purchase.
That was exciting hockey.
That was great stuff then. It was a little on the cusp, but it was good. It was good. There was a lot of trapping and slowdown tactics.
Well, John, when you consider what they had to play with versus what we see today, and it's just a couple of practices in, But what are your first impressions from what you've seen with a Rod Brind'Amour camp and the new guys who are coming in?
First of all, great to see both of you, and your off season has treated you well, and you both look fit and ready to go. And
ready for squash.
Okay. .com, that's a good one. I will say that I think to characterize it just off of one day and a half here, a lot of spirit. A lot of movement, which is good. I think he's doing an excellent job being organized for a first-year guy, you know, running his first camp, of teaching a little bit, which is important the first couple of days. It's not like it used to be. You used to have a week to kind of lay down the groundwork for systems. Now they have to cram it in about 3.5-4 days and get to a preseason game. He's doing a good job at that, but he's getting them moving all the time, which I think conditioning-wise and just setting a tempo and a standard of what's expected at a practice is vitally important for him to turn this culture around. So for me, those are the initial observations.
It's been a summer of change for the Carolina Hurricanes, really from the top down.
Yeah.
Let's start, and you touched on it a little bit, with the head coach. What do you see? It's only been a couple of days, but what do you see in head coach Rod Brind'Amour? And you two go way back. So how have you seen him evolve from a player to a captain and now to a head coach?
Okay, so, you know, Michael, it's a great question, and I think – when you get to situations like this, you have to look back over a long period of time and look at the personality of who's involved here. And no disrespect to anybody who's ever played for the Hurricanes, but I personally feel that Rod Brind'Amour is the most significant player that's ever played for this franchise. And it has a lot to do with, obviously, what happened on the ice, but also in terms of what he was able to help cultivate away from the ice. And we've lost the handle on that over the last decade. And it's unfortunate that all of that has to be repaired in almost a singular season. So he is the guy that I think is a perfect choice to kind of lead the team and organization back to a new place again, because his heart is completely invested in all of this. He's the one guy that would put his hand up and say, let me have a crack at this. Let me do this. It's very similar, boys, for me, when he was a player and the room was given to him after the canceled season and he became the captain. It was the first time in his career that it wasn't him and Eric Lindros. It wasn't him and Ronnie Francis. It was Rod Brind'Amour. And he was able to throw his arms around the whole thing and take it to a brand new place. He's got a big job here. He's got a lot of things he's got to repair. He's got to have everything work. So many boxes have to be checked for this team to be successful and make the playoffs. But I can't think of a better choice than Rod Brind'Amour.
Well, John, to that end, you know, as you said, training camp, you used to get a week just to get into shape and then like a week to get to know the group, and you got to do it in about 72 hours. There could be up to 10 new faces in the lineup for this team. How hard is it to force that or form that chemistry instead of force it? Or do you not get that until you actually start getting into October and the season plays, if you're this team and this coach?
It's really hard, because as a coach, you'd probably like to get it right down to your group, but you don't want to do it at the expense of younger players who have earned an opportunity to show what they can do. And younger players at least come to this environment and say, hey, I was given a fair chance. I was given an opportunity to skate with some of these guys. You never want it to be where, hey, I had no chance. I went there and there's no opportunity, no jobs available. It was a waste of time. And I'm now in Charlotte's camp. You know, you don't want that to happen. So I think he has to be cognizant of all of that. But you also, what's going to be important for this group of Hurricanes is to get to a level of chemistry as quickly as possible, too. So I think it's good that we're not spending the majority of the preseason on airplanes flying all over the place playing these preseason games in outposts that you're never going to see again. I think it's important that it's fairly localized and they can spend a lot of time together, play a fair amount of games, enough to get ready for the start of the season. But I'm sure he wants to build a little internal competition and then get to what it is, and get that being the team, and get those chemical equations working in the right direction. That's going to be really important with new faces.
You mentioned competition and new faces, obviously. What are you looking for the Canes defense this year? I mean, it's already one of the strongest in the league, and I think the moves over the offseason only improved it. And then there's the competition, too, for a guy like Hayden Fleury, who played 67 games in his rookie season last year. I think is going to have to come in and have a good camp in order to earn playing time. And guys like Trevor Carrick, Roland McEwen, how is that competition going to drive that defense to be even better this season?
Well, the back end will drive the team. It's the strength of the team. It's the obvious strength of the team. It's one of the best defensive cores in the National Hockey League. It's certainly top five. So you could argue about different teams, a team like Nashville, Tampa, so on. I think it's fair to say that the Hurricanes might not be at the level of those teams yet from an organizational standpoint, but certainly in the back end they are. So when you look at it, you have elite presence in your top two with Hamilton and Slavin, and that's how they've started camp. If that remains the same, then you have both guys who have an opportunity. In Jacob's case, he's totally complete, in my opinion. Hamilton's case, he's elite offensively. He's outstanding defensively, but he's not that complete guy. Maybe he emerges now under this new environment to take the next step as a player, to get into that, you know, equation of guys who might be considered for a Norris Trophy. I think that could be a possibility for Slavin down the road. Then you get to the next group. DeHaan is an exceptional player. Great shot blocker, steady, excellent young man. He's going to be great there. And for me, the key to the whole thing is Justin Falk. Where does this go? So many things have been said about him. So many rumors have been out there that it's almost a foregone conclusion they're going to move him. You know, are they going to do that? Are they going to keep him? Is he going to get to a level of consistency where he can be elite? I think that's what's been lost here with his game over the last couple of years, is the fact that he has an ability to get to an elite level. It's been lost, but it's still there. He looks trim. He looks good. He looks happy. And I think if he's on board completely with what's going on, that could be one of the best things to happen to the team. Then you get to 5 and 6. So then you have Pesci, Van Riemsdyk, and you got somebody playing their offside, whoever that is, and then you've got the internal competition of who's next. And for Hayden Fleury, who's trimmed about 15 pounds and looks pretty good in one workout that I saw, you know, here's an opportunity for him to really earn something. And I think that's the biggest thing. Another thing that I could take away from being around this team for just a couple of days here is the earning process of what has to be here, not just the birthright, not just your first-round pick. You're going to get an opportunity to play. No, you're going to have to earn it now. So Hayden Fleury's going to have to be in a survival mode to earn a 7 spot or a playing time, or does he end up somewhere else, or is he pushed out by McEwen or Carrick or somebody like that? You know, and for those guys, boy, this is their last chance maybe. That's all good, because I see that developing a hunger here, which we haven't seen in a while.
The best play-by-play voice in America is joining us here on the Canescast. He's John Forslund. You can see him on NBC and, of course, Fox Sports Carolina is where I'm lucky enough to work with you, John. And something that isn't a birthright, it has to be earned. And it kind of goes back to a Rod Brindamore question. There's a new captain, and just one captain for the Canes, and it's Justin Williams. And to a man, yesterday, everybody said the right thing about, you know, nobody has more respect in the room than Justin Williams. But how important is, A, he's the singular voice in the room now, and then, B, what it means to have Justin Williams be that leader because of his ties to Rod Brindamore, because of his ties to how this organization used to be and where they want to get?
Well, I think a captain is, you know, as we look at it, fans look at it, people on the outside look at it, is vitally important. You know, the players will always downplay it. And the players always say, well, we have numerous leaders in the room. It's not about one guy. That's the nature of a hockey player. But let me tell you something. It's like anything else. Do the arithmetic. You have to have one singular voice as kind of the go-to person. If you anoint two people, well, who is that person? You know, who is that person? And and it's almost like a handoff here. It's your job today to be the spokes guy, you know, for the dressing room. I think it didn't work. It created a faceless team. I think these are fair things to say because it was said at the time of the announcement last year by some of us. It's not revisionist history here. I think the players just said the right things, and now we know they did because of what they said yesterday. Justin Williams should have been the captain last year, is the captain now. This is something that's so well-deserved for his career. He's an unbelievable player when you look at his history. He's going to knock on the door of the Hall of Fame, I think, and this might be another step in that.
What makes him tick? Because you've been around him. He is a unique person, and I just think he's such a huge asset to have around, especially a young team.
Being genuine is so important in life, but it's very important in terms of this sport. If you're genuine, it's going to work. Not only because obviously there are players of different levels of talent, right? So the great players have this unbelievable God-given talent, but there's a genuine nature to some of them which correlates with every player that they're surrounded by and helps them in pressurized situations be successful. So I again go back to years and years ago, 2 hours before Game 7 on June 19th, 2006, when Justin Williams is walking around the locker room with a big smile on his face about to play a game seven and start this lineage of outstanding game seven success in his career. And when I asked him, because we had access to the players at that time, geez, Willie, you know, you look pretty loose. And he said, you know, Johnny, what's the worst that could happen here tonight? We lose. That's it. We'll get up tomorrow morning. You know, that type of mindset doesn't mean he was taking it lightly, but makes him successful under pressure. The rest is history. Mr. Game 7 and all that, which he hates. Most importantly, he's a genuine person, and so is the guy that's coaching the team. And those two guys have the ultimate respect for each other, and that's why that's an intangible that might help the Hurricanes. We'll sleep on that because a lot of people aren't giving this team that much of a chance, but that might be an intangible that takes it to another place.
This is going to be a young team this year, and Justin Williams said it yesterday that he and Jordan Staal are really the only two guys in their 30s in the locker room. What can such a young team learn from a guy like Justin Williams, and even a guy like Rod Brind'Amour in his career? What can a young team like the Hurricanes learn from those two individuals?
Well, you would hope it's the cliche of expecting to win and knowing how to win, because that's something that we can talk about till the cows come home and fans can talk about, but we really don't understand what it's like to be an elite athlete under circumstances where that's your job, not just to show up and be part of something, but to show up and win. And that's why I think the standard that they'll have to get back to. You know, it's not okay to put your time in and go home and understand that the next day will come and maybe things will get better, maybe not. No, if things aren't going well, there's something wrong here. And that's something that you could see seeping out of Justin Williams last season as the year went along. But he couldn't say it completely because it wasn't his room. It wasn't his place. Now it is. If he doesn't like something about how you prepare, how you carry yourself, how you show up in the community, all these things that are really important, especially here, he'll say that. The coach will set the bar, too. The coach understands every facet of this and what's expected. And again, that's why I think this is not only important, guys, for what happens on the ice, but there's an organizational thing here that has to get back on the rails, too. And I think both those guys understand what it means at the best to be a Hurricane and to get back to that.
Speaking of expectations, how do you manage the expectations of Andrei Svechnikov and, to another extent, Marty Necas, two teenagers who are going to be counted on, to deliver for this team?
I would hope that all of us, including the fans, just let this happen. And with young players, you know, the saying is, you know, you never bank on young players, you get surprised by young players. And so, unfortunately, and hopefully in a fortunate sense, it works out for the team. But the way it is right now, based on the roster, this is not only a situation for both guys where they're going to be in, they have to be successful, they have to produce points. Let's not get carried away with that right now. Let's just watch each preseason game as it goes along, each day. Players will always say we want to get better each and every day, and let it happen. They will have pitfalls, and they may not. You know, you may see one, you may see both, you know, get both in the Rookie of the Year conversation. That would be tremendous. Or one struggles, one doesn't, or both do. The important thing is they both have unbelievable futures, and you have to be careful with what you expect. They're going to be a big part of this, and I think it's another way. Justin Williams, Jordan Staal, who we overlook sometimes and we don't talk about, these guys will carry these guys through any of those situations they may be in. But there's no doubt, especially with Natchez, I believe that he should have been here last year. I really do. I mean, I know that was a little bit radical, but I think he should have been here last year, and let's just hope he can, you know, with Rask's injury, he can slide into where it's a heightened role, really, right off the hop.
You've been around successful Hurricanes teams. What's it going to take for this team to be successful and get back to the playoffs?
Well, essentially, an unbelievable start. And I say that because everything that surrounds this team, we'll look back, and it's fair, we'll look back at what's happened here. So a stumble at the very beginning will be probably more catastrophic than it should be, because it will be the old, well, here we go again mentality. For the players, they have to understand that they're getting a brand new opportunity in a completely different direction. I hope that it gets off to a good start for that reason. I also hope for Rod's benefit as a first-year coach, that happens. Because I do believe the emotion and the energy of what he can lay down will work right away, and if they can have a different start than we've seen year after year after year, then it crescendos and it continues to build. And that will help young guys feel good about where they're at and take some of the pressure off. Struggles for a team eat up a young player, and it's far worse for that young player than it probably is, because then they try to do too much. And when a young player tries to overextend, it's a disaster. And that's why I really believe we've talked about it so much, you know, get off to a good start. Yeah, you have to be in the playoff mix, but this team needs it to get the fans on board too.
And by the way, this interview is being recorded live in front of a peanut gallery. I would say studio audience, but they're throwing water bottles at each other. So if there's a distraction, that's where we're at.
Well, we are back to school in many ways.
Exactly.
Going back in that direction,
but I have been
some interesting people around the team in their first season.
Sure,
so we'll see how
they all fit in, how they mesh, John.
Yeah, you know, we talk about earning things.
Exactly,
it goes right through the public relations department.
I mean, it runs.
And
right
I question the leadership of that group anyway, and always have. But we'll see what they deliver.
I think it's a little too early for us to jump on a public relations leader who's taken a couple of hits the last few years. Might be slowing down.
If we're talking about the guy who runs the public relations department, the last visual I saw was him in some kind of a kayak at Traverse City with his feet up, and our good friend Dottie over here, you know, travel log and all of that. What happened there?
Oh, it was a beautiful morning, as was every morning in Traverse City, as I'm sure it still is in Traverse City.
Uh-huh.
And we felt a little adventurous, and we hit the water and did a little kayaking, a little morning workout, upper body workout, after a few mornings in the gym, working the lower body mainly. So
that's
nice.
Important in life.
Yeah, it was good.
Work that lower body.
Yeah.
Balance.
Is the key.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Working the lower body. Exactly. You don't want to be a triangle.
Nope.
Exactly.
You want to overcompensate in any area.
Yeah, we live in the triangle. We don't want to
we
be
do.
One.
Thank we
you.
Do, yeah.
John, to that end, let's bring up something that Michael Smith, a.k.a. Dottie or Smitty or Webby or many things, brought up. It was competition. He mentioned on the blue line about the guys who play behind them, the goaltending competition, and what you want to see out of Peter Mrazek and Scott Darling. Clearly, we want to see better play from Scott Darling, but how much will that competition maybe drive and hopefully improve that situation this
year? Well, in a positive sense, yes. In a negative sense, it's a huge question mark. So neither goalie leads anybody in a direction of, oh, we got this. You know, I think it's a project for both. Both players in their history have the ability to be battlers, the ability to fight off not supposed tos and get it done. It's huge for Scott Darling. It's as large as his frame in terms of the mountain he has to climb to fix all of these things to get back to where he needs to go. And again, like I stressed during last offseason, the mental capacity to become a number one goaltender in the National Hockey League is extremely difficult. And that, to be fair, is something he has to accomplish. Whether that happens or not remains to be seen. You might be just a good number two in the National Hockey League. And if he's a good number two and he's effective, okay. The other guy, Mrazek, had the net at this level, has already done it once, had the opportunity to get a net for a playoff team last year and really put them in a position to make the playoffs, but then lost the net. So a lot like that little microcosm for Mrazek that happened in Philadelphia, that's like his career. He has superior talent. He has the ability to put a team on his shoulders and carry a team. He also has the ability to lose himself in the net, give up rebounds, and be picked apart. So that's the weakness of the team, to be fair to our fans.
Yep.
That is the weakness of the team. That is the area that is concerning. And until we get into preseason and we see the who's going to jockey for the job, you know, we're gonna be in a pretty good spot to see exactly what we're talking about. But I will say this, it's all-out competition. At least I feel that. Whereas in the last few seasons, it's been what's supposed to happen. Like, you know, last year, Scott Darling was supposed to be the number one guy in opening night. Not this year. At least I don't think it is. I think it's up for grabs. Whoever has the best preseason is the goalie. And then you get below that, they got to come up with a future, too. Yeah. And for Alex Nedeljkovic and Callum Booth, who will both be in Charlotte, huge years. In Nedeljkovic's case, you know, the opportunity to continue to improve and make good on a decent season last year after a first year of struggle. And Booth's case, who looked sharp in 2 days, to take the next step. And he's got some ability. But organizationally, that's a weakness right now, to be fair.
Well, we think the strength is the defensive side, at least, mm-hmm. how they're built. Mm-hmm. What's another strength of this team that you're looking forward to or that you think that this team can bank on night in, night out?
Well, I think the areas up front, obviously, you worry about a goal scoring.
Yeah.
I mean, that hasn't been fixed.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is another one of those boxes. So when we talk about checking boxes, your goalies check, defense has a hold up, and that's probably the closest thing to a lock that they yeah. have. And up front, it's who's going to score. And there's an experiment with Sebastian Aho right now to drop him into the middle to start the season. And, you know, will that work? And if that works, they're going to be strengthened a little bit, but now they've lost Victor Rask. So to me, that's still going to be the area that yeah. they're going to have to look at. There's going to have to be real good balance scoring. And the fourth line has got to emerge, whoever's on it, as a line that can produce. Because if you're going to struggle to score goals, you can't be a 2.5-3-line team. Yeah. Otherwise, you're going to be, you know, 25-31 offensively again. So that's very, very important. And then can the defense, with the addition of Dougie Hamilton, at 5-on-5 be a scoring threat? And the defense, even with the very good defense, young defense that we've talked about for a number of years here, Slavin emerging, Pesci, Hanifin, so on, at 5-on-5 it wasn't much of a threat. Now with Hamilton being kind of the lead dog in that way, DeHaan can be sneaky with that. Falk, if he's consistent, can do more than just be a power play guy. That will help the forwards. So I hope the defense becomes more of a scoring threat at 5-on-5. And in Hamilton's career, the numbers will tell you that that is the case. He's a threat not only in the power play, but he can join the rush, come late, they'll give him the puck, and he can pick apart any goalie. He's that good with his shot. So, you know, they've never had that. They've never had a real good 5-on-5 defense scoring from the back end. It's all the points have come on the power play, what power play there has been. So those are the things. The other box is that you're asking an 18 and a 19-year-old to be players, real players. And that's another one that's got to be checked off in order for the team to get there.
All right. For people who don't know, John is a big music fan, in particular the boss, Bruce Springsteen. He is Bruce Springsteen of our broadcast crew. Oh, he's boy. he's the leader. But I want to ask you a question. I think you're the perfect guy to get this answer from. If there's a song that encapsulates what this season should be for the Hurricanes from the boss, either solo or with the E Street Band, what would that song be?
Promised Land.
Ooh, I like that one. Hopefully it's not Badlands.
No, the Promised Land. Lead us back.
That'd be pretty good.
Because that's what this is about. This is about the team finally building trust back with a fan base, and the fan base getting back to the Promised Land, which is really good here and has taken a lot of hits over the years and is a mess right now, to be fair. It's a mess, and that's got to get back.
That's fair. Yeah. That's a great answer, too. Really quick thinking on your feet. Yeah, it's impressive.
1978, Darkness on the edge of town. And we've been through that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
We don't need any more of that.
No.
So just saying. Yeah. For me, I might have leaned towards another song off of that same album, Prove It All Night.
Right.
Because they're going to have to.
But then you run into a problem with afternoon games.
That's true, yeah.
So you can't necessarily go there.
No, I like that. Promised Land.
Promised Land.
Done and done.
It's there. It's out there. It's been done. It's been done. This has been a great place for the NHL. And I'm tired of it getting kicked around a lot. And this is a very important season to make sure it works.
John, thanks so much for
Thank
the time.
Guys.
We appreciate it.
Yep.
It was great, great talking with John Forslund. I mean, anytime you can sit down with him and just pick his brain about the state of the team, really anything.
I'd like to do a full podcast interview with him just on Bruce Springsteen's albums and songs.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Bill Bernstein would be a big fan of that.
Yeah.
Strength and conditioning coach of the
We'll
Carolina
be sure not
Hurricanes.
To ask any food questions
because
we know Bill is not a fan
not.
Of those. He's made it very clear.
But we're kind of near the end of it, but this is a point in the podcast where
if you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
All right, Michael. I know that you don't have one, even though you've had 2 weeks to prepare.
We sort of made up our own earlier.
Yeah, well, it was, but it wasn't.
We cheated.
So,
or I cheated, at least.
So, I'm going to do this, and it's something that I asked John Forslund, and it has to deal with the makeup of the team. Is before we do that, we've got a penalty shot coming in on Scott Darling.
Justin Williams again.
Deke, wait. Oh, he hit the post. Actually, he hit the upper 90. He hit right where the post and the crossbar meet. Had Scott Darling beat. But the post, unkind. Iron, unkind. Tim Brando, wherever you are, thank you. All right. So here it is. If you like it, keep it. If not, send it right back. There will be 9 new faces on the Canes opening night lineup against the New York Islanders.
I'm bad at quick math, but I think that checks out. I could sit here and try to count them on my hand, but it seems like that checks out.
I believe that that'll be right, especially now with the Victor-esque situation.
That's true. I mean, that's really one of, and we talked about it earlier, it's just one of the unexpected pieces of news that gets dealt early in training camp. But I think for the Hurricanes, only good things for a guy like Lucas Wallmark or even a guy like Sebastian Aho, who played in the middle some last season. Is he ready to make that jump into the middle, because I do think that's where the Hurricanes envision him full-time.
Yep.
So can he do that now? Is he ready to go in the middle now? I think is a question they're going to have to answer. But, yeah, 9 new faces I think seems to check out at least. I'll take that.
All right, yeah, I think that's where we are. And when I say on the roster, that means you have 12 forwards, 6 defensemen, and 2 goalies.
Well, there's definitely one goaltender that's different.
Yeah. But, like, of that 20,
yeah.
I think half of the roster is going to be different.
Yeah.
So
you
got to get changes up to speed quick, too, in this league.
Yeah. Changes from top to bottom in this organization over the summer. And I don't want to go too far into this. It's only the second day of camp, but it feels a little different.
It does feel different, Mike.
And that's just, that's just from being in the room after skates for one day and observing now our 4th practice. It feels a little different. And when we talk to a guy like Justin Falk or talk to a guy like Jordan Staal, they seem to be looser. They seem to have a clearer head now that they don't have this weirdness of the co-captaincy weighing on them.
Yep.
You've got the singular leader in Justin Williams, who's clearly ready to be that guy. It feels different so far, and I hope that translates to results come October.
All right. Is it even foolish of me to ask, do you have one?
Yeah.
All right.
It's definitely foolish.
Yeah, I figured it would be.
It's become a bit at this point, so I'm just committing to it.
All right, this is where we'll tell strength and conditioning coach Bill Berniston to tune out. We'll talk to you next week, Bill. But for those of you who like food, Michael Smith was on a cruise. We're not going to ask about that, but you were in Traverse City.
Yes.
And you were putting up photos left and right of everything. Is Traverse City one of these hidden gems in America that people don't know enough about?
It is absolutely gorgeous. It's probably my favorite. I would put it up there as one of my favorite road cities. And I'm going to put it in the category of a road city because we do travel there once a year for the prospect tournament.
And you spend time there.
We spend time there. I would love to vacation there during the summer when the town is really going. Though I will say, when we're up there, it's the perfect time because the tourists have, for the most part, cleared out. The weather is still beautiful. I'm sure in a couple of weeks you probably will need a jacket or two if you go up there. But the weather was just perfect. No humidity. The food is delicious. It's a great little town, and I encourage anybody who's looking maybe for a new vacation spot to check it out. And no, I was not paid by the city of Traverse City.
I was
going to
say, are you now part of the Chamber of Commerce of Traverse City?
This Canescast now presented to you by the city of Traverse City.
Once again, we're looking for sponsors. Yeah, so Traverse City, if you want us to say Pure Michigan,
yeah, if it
I'm
makes
here
sense,
for you.
It definitely makes sense for me. So if it makes sense for you, I mean, come aboard.
I mean, did you get like any kind of free stuff saying that
no.
you would talk up
no,
Traverse
absolutely
City?
Not. Right. I'm doing It's the kindness of my own heart.
All right. Well,
or the foolishness of myself.
Well, so next week we're going to have to put the Canes cast on hold till the middle of the week because I'll be in Los Angeles for broadcasters meetings for Fox.
That makes sense. You are a broadcaster, yes. So that checks out.
Well, John and Tripp will be doing the games that you can listen to.
Yes.
So you'll be able to tune into that at CarolinaHurricanes.com and tune into John and Tripp calling all of the action, I believe, when the Tampa Bay Lightning host your Carolina Hurricanes. Seeing John and Tripp, they are normally the broadcasters who go to represent us on the Fox side. They can't go, so I finally drew the straw that wins.
So you get to go spend some time in L.A. while the Hurricanes experience their first two preseason games.
No, I'll be back in time for the second preseason
game. Oh, you'll be back.
And
which you can catch on Hurricanes.com.
Yes.
It'll be live streaming.
Games will be streamed.
With John and Tripp on the call, I believe.
Exactly. I'll just be roaming around the building for those. So.
But you get to do a television game in the preseason, and that's exciting.
Yeah, against Nashville. Can't wait for that. That'll be really good. I believe that's, the 25th of September?
Yeah, I think it's next weekend.
Yep. So we have all of that. Actually, I think it's a Tuesday.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You're getting there, buddy. Don't worry.
I'm losing track of time, and it's only the second day
of
camp.
For all of us. All right. So that'll do it for episode 57. Of the Canes cast. He is the Web's Michael Smith.
And you are TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Ooh, that was sultry.
Thank you.